Hello and welcome to your favorite daily comic book YouTube channel, Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
We're going to be looking at five of the best Army comics of all time. And military comics certainly have quite a history as a genre. These are a little bit special because these are actually published by and for the men and women in the armed forces. So this is going to be an exciting episode. It's one I've been wanting to do for a while. Cartoonist Kayfabe is a daily video channel about comics. If you guys are new to Cartoonist Kayfabe, welcome. And if you're looking for coverage of your favorite comics or creators, we have over 1,000 videos for you to search through, and we may have already covered your favorite comics or creators. If you go to the Cartoonist Kayfabe YouTube channel, you'll see a little magnifying glass for a search. Enter in that comic book name or creator name and see if we haven't already covered them. If we haven't, please leave a comment below this video so we can continue building our list of books and creators that we should be looking at on this channel, because it is the comic book video channel. I also want to remind everybody that you can see us in person September 8th, 9th, and 10th at Baltimore Comic Con, a great comic book convention for comic book fans. If you haven't been there, check it out. And if you have, we look forward to seeing you there this year. We also have a Cartoonist Kayfabe Patreon, 3 levels of patronage will get you access to our videos early, which will give you a leg up on the kayfabe effect. You'll be the first one tracking down the books that we show off on these videos, which sometimes disappear quickly and can be hard to find. And they also go up in price when people start looking for them. So join our Patreon and you can be the first one in line before those price hikes take place. And at the King Kayfaber level, you'll get all of our videos first and you'll sit in on the recording sessions, which really gives you a leg up on the kayfabe effect. So Ed, we're going to look at 5 different sets of collections of comics that have appeared mostly in military publications. And I figured I'm going to organize them by chronology.
So of war.
Yes.
I see.
So we're going to start with Bill Malden's collection of Willie and Joe. This is a series that Fantagraphics published in an amazing, like, do you guys hear that? It's like canvas. This could be like Army issued, at least the case. I don't even know what this is. I feel like I've had Army bags that are made out of this material. Design props go to Jacob Covey, a designer that we've interviewed on past videos that worked for Fantagraphics for, 20 years maybe, and did some really great design work over that time period. This box set up there with his best work as far as I'm concerned. And something that really put me over the top of buying this, because it was just such a nice, you know, you can see, very thoughtful in its design. Bill Malden, meanwhile, one of the most celebrated cartoonists of all time, the youngest to ever win a Pulitzer Prize. I think he was 23 when he won a Pulitzer Prize for the comics that are contained primarily in Volume 2 of this series. But he joins the military in 1940, and right away he starts doing cartoons for his division, 45th out of Oklahoma. And what I have found in doing, you know, putting this video together, there were, like, virtually every single Army base had its own newspaper. Sometimes they were weekly or whatever, you know, they'd be produced on the base and stuff. But this is a one of the great parts of this video is all of these books have a lot of context. There's a lot of extra material about the creators, about where these things saw print. And in this case, this intro is written by Todd DiPastino, who did the biography of Bill Malden. I had the pleasure of watching him speak at an event, Veterans Day, and talking about this cartoonist with a room full of veterans. Let me tell you, as good of a comics event talk as I've ever seen in my life. And it's always interesting to me to see comics that really connect with non-comic readers. And the story of Malden is just phenomenal. For one, great cartoonist, and was able to capture the infantryman. He was an infantryman. So able to capture that point of view. Like, he was in the European theater of war and was really, you know, going through the mud with everybody else and wishing he had dry socks for his feet, and able to capture that enlisted man point of view. Towards the end of his life, as Pastino was writing or getting to know him for, you know, as a biographer, he ends up in a retirement home, and there's a public, his story gets released publicly, right, that he's in this position. He's basically dying, and people start sending him letters. Over 10,000 people sent him letters, would send him clippings, because these comics meant so much to these enlisted men who weren't able to write home and capture what they were experiencing. But he would receive letters that would have, like, the old yellowed clipped out cartoons, because that's what the men would cut out and send to their family back home, and the family would cherish that. You know, in some cases, the men didn't make it home,
right.
You know, and that was their experience of the war that they were trying to communicate with their loved ones back home. And whenever Malden fell ill towards the end of his life, those people were reaching out to him to let him know exactly what this meant to them and to, you know, both the men and the people at home. Partway through the war, some of the writers back home, journalists, tap into what he's doing. And it sets him up for things like syndication and book deals, because this stuff, again, captures a piece of history as it was unfolding in a way that really couldn't be communicated any other way. This is one of those testimonies to what comics and what cartooning can really do, where it can transcend language and words alone. And with the help of, you know, a couple of big news stories, Bill Malden becomes one of the best known. I think when he comes out of the Army, they describe him as the best known enlisted man in the Army.
Mm.
And it's a result of these cartoons that really spoke to everybody. And of course, Fantagraphics, they're going to put out a collection like this. It means we're going to get end notes on some of the comics that run through here. There's a lot of interesting notes on how they were put these books together, because they're printed, as you can imagine, very, very cheaply in a theater of war. There's no record of some of these things. So it was hard to put together a complete collection and try to piece together this broke down newsprint. But there are some originals and things, that a lot of which ended up in the Library of Congress. So they are available for people to track down. So you're seeing like original art, you know, almost an artist edition of some of this stuff. And you also see him using different tools, because these are drawn literally in the middle of a war. So you used what you could find. You can see duochade paper and stuff too. You know, like, it's interesting what materials he was able to get hold of at that time. But great notes and ancillary material around these. And this stuff was so popular that it actually got the ire of General Patton. And this set up a meeting between Malden and General Patton.
I'm sure he noticed the propagandistic value of the artwork and stuff.
He wasn't happy about it. The way they were supposed to meet was no rank, is the way they described it. That meant we were going to have a face-to-face talk about this. And, you know, let's be honest. Now, of course, it's General Patton. I don't know if that dude ever took off the rank, but did not get along. And Dwight Eisenhower had to actually step in to stop Patton from...
Patton will fuck people up.
Yeah,
he got in trouble
exactly
a lot for beating people up.
He was not happy, and it was Eisenhower who basically went to bat for Malden, you know, pulling rank once again as the commander of the European forces, and basically said, there's a value to this. You know, it's a way for these enlisted men to kind of, like, vent, which was Malden's point of view as well. These, I flagged a couple of comics that were in Patton's possession at this meeting. This video is brought to you by the Cartoonist Kayfabe Patreon. Three different levels will give you access to our videos early, and at the King Kayfaber level, you'll get access to all of our videos first to offset the kayfabe effect, and you sit in on the recording session, which really gives you a leg up. We are also working cartoonists. The best way to support Cartoonist Kayfabe is to buy our comics, and coming out in time for Christmas, Hip Hop Family Tree from Ed Piskor. 500 plus pages collecting all of the Hip Hop Family Tree in one handsome volume, along with 140 pages of extra back material, notes, art that hasn't been reprinted before, new art created just for this volume. Red Room, Crypto Killers, is the latest series in the Red Room universe. There are two volumes in trade paperback, and this third volume is being published right now. Issue 3, recently published, features Latchkey Kids, now known as Switchblade Shorties, which is Ed's ongoing daily comic strip. This is the first appearance, so you may want to add this one to your collection as a key back issue. X-Men Grand Design is going to be collecting all three volumes into one edition, also in time for the holidays this year, the X-Men Grand Design Trilogy. You can pre-order that one now. My latest comics, True Crime Funnies, self-published, featuring three nonfiction stories, including two wrestling stories, available on my website or my Patreon. Young adult graphic novel, The Plain Janes. Street Angel, Deadliest Girl Alive, featuring the homeless ninja on a skateboard, collecting eight complete stories. This is my action superhero series. And a new volume of Street Angel will be due out later this year in November, also from Image Comics. Get Princess of Poverty and Deadliest Girl Alive to have all of the Street Angel comics. And Hulk Grand Design, my contribution to the Grand Design mythos, celebrating 60 years of The Incredible Hulk. And now back to the video. Here's one whenever they are being welcomed into this French town, right? They're liberating stuff. And you can see our commanding officers are getting hit with tomatoes and things that some of the enlisted men are throwing at them. General Patton did not appreciate that at all. And here's another one that Patton had pulled, where you see we have an opera house, but they're going to be entertaining the men. So girls, 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 enlisted men going in the front door, officers. They're going to the same show.
Right.
They're just not doing it from the public street. And it was this tension between, you know, the officers versus the enlisted men that made Patton uncomfortable, but also really allowed Malden to connect to these people. And I didn't pull it out of this collection, but in the intro to Mail Call, it is written by Bill Malden. And Mail Call is Milton Caniff's answer to World War II and trying to do something for the enlisted men. And one of the strips from this foreword, these are both Bill Malden comics, you see here, Joe, yesterday you saved my life and I swore I'd pay you back. Here's my last pair of dry socks. One of the stories that really got to me whenever I heard about his life is there at the end, people would send socks to him.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
That gives me chills, man.
Yeah, really, you know, like, again, like you think about what comics can be at their highest level, and here you go. Here's another amazing one. Just give me a couple aspirin. I already got a Purple Heart. So guys who are there, in the case of Bill Malden, actually in combat, in the case of Milton Caniff, had 4F, which meant he wasn't physically fit to serve. But if you guys know Caniff and his work with Terry and the Pirates and Steve Canyon, patriot through and through, you know, definitely a champion of the armed forces.
To his detriment, like he carried that tradition on through Vietnam, and that was the downfall of Steve Canyon strip that he was doing at the time. Like, you know, the culture changed, and the younger people, they obviously were not into the Vietnam War, but he was still of that mindset of like, rah rah rah, America could do no wrong, we wouldn't be in a war for no reason, and the American people were just like, you know what, maybe we don't need Steve Canyon anymore.
Yeah, it is sad, you know, when you have a 60 years of public life every day in the newspaper.
And you're
not, you know, you're an old man at that point.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, you're not by the learning 80s. New tricks.
But during the during World War II, what he decided to do, since he couldn't serve, is did a little bit of art for the armed forces, but then he starts doing a strip that's going to be syndicated. And it starts out, it's Terry and the Pirates, and they're like, the syndicate's like, you can't do this. It doesn't work that way. Do a different strip, change the name of it, whatever. But, you know, syndication, like, you can't do it. So what he comes up with is Mail Call, a strip that was designed specifically for syndication with the armed forces. And like I said, a lot of these bases, they would have their own newspapers. There were also big papers like Stars and Stripes that would kind of serve everybody, you know, Overseas Weekly. There were some of these giant publications that went just to military bases, but there were also local papers. Mail Call ends up being serialized for, I think it's 2 years. Well, 42 to 46. I didn't realize it was that long. 4 years that it's created on a weekly basis, in addition to everything Milt is doing in his regular strip, which... Part of the intro that Malden talks about is he says he worked 27-hour days, 10 days a week.
Yeah.
And that's before he started doing another strip.
It doesn't make any sense, man.
But he did this for free, and by the time it reached its peak, syndicated in 3,000 newspapers, to give you an idea how many of these bases were out there that that they were putting this stuff out. And one of the super interesting parts, if you're a comics historian and a Caniff fan, these are, I hate to say gag strips, but they're all self-contained. Which is very, very different than Terry and the Pirates or Steve Canyon.
Don't ask, don't tell.
And he talks about it in his intro, you know, the process of making this and starting from the last panel and working backwards, you know, and getting the setup to that point. And you can see, you know, pretty girl because you want to keep the troop morale up. One of the themes in the work that we're going to be looking through, most of the intros have the idea of, like, it was a different world. You know, it was a different time whenever we were doing this stuff.
Oh, because it's just, like, a lot of chauvinistic stuff or something?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, you know, this at this point, like, we're looking at 75 years ago.
Sure.
80 years ago, almost. So, Remarkable Object. This one is printed, or published, I should say, by Kitchen Sink Press.
In their traditional format for their... strip reprints.
And they also have that great context, yeah. You know, this stuff is so valuable, just seeing like what goes into creating a strip at that time period, and nobody bigger than Milt Caniff at that time, and yet he's still giving, basically creating another day of work for himself every week to just be part of the effort.
That's amazing.
He was so good in terms of military, and we've seen this story several times, where he was basically anticipating moves that the military was going to do, to the point that military intelligence came out to him and was like, what's going on?
Chill out.
Where are you getting this info? That's exactly. So an amazing book there, and an amazing cartoonist. Speaking of amazing cartoonists, think of what the Army is putting together in terms of comics. Like, they could have their own Hall of Fame for these comics. Will Eisner, who had done some work in World War II, and this is a story that we heard Stan Lee talk about in the recent Stan Lee documentary. I've talked to a few historians about this, and I asked them, had they ever heard this idea that Stan Lee was making comics for the Army in World War II? I don't know about that, but here's the detail of Will Eisner doing it. And he starts out doing it in Army Motors, I think, is the name of it in the beginning. And he does that for World War II. And the idea was, here's instructions, man. You guys are getting new equipment. You're all over the world. Want to keep you alive. Here's information quickly. And that was the idea, is that comics could deliver the technical info fast that these people needed to basically stay alive. It was a good experience for everybody. And in 1951... the military contacts Eisner about doing PS Magazine. Let's do a series of these things. Army Motors was great. Let's keep that going, because, you know, at that point, military industrial complex is
off and running.
Exactly. And he signs up for that. You know, this was something that Eisner really pioneered, the idea of education as a tool for comics and communicating information. So he gets tasked to do PS Magazine, which is approximately 5 by 7 inches. So that's why you're looking at this book. This is a fantastic book, by the way. Abrams is the publisher. Really beautiful reproduction put together by Eddie Campbell, which is interesting. You know, not an American that's putting this together, but a great cartoonist and a comics historian putting this together. Over 200 issues produced from 51 to 1971. This was a big, big project for Will Eisner.
Yeah. Now, didn't PS Magazine continue beyond his tenure? Because Joe Kubert had a contract and was doing stuff.
Yeah, it. I'm not sure, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. But what you see is a sample. What this book puts together is a sample. I thought this was neat because it's almost like the Kirby collages. You know, you're doing photo elements with cartoon characters.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting to see that.
You know where he innovated that was that famous Gerhard Schnabel spirit story with the man who could fly? You know, because there would be cityscapes and stuff that would be high contrast photos. Or not even high contrast, but just run through the photostat.
And you see this stuff evolve. It's a pretty good document in terms of, like, whenever a new story comes up, it's dated, you know, on the first page, so you can kind of see the evolution. Very inventive visually, which I think is noteworthy. You know, you see so much, like, comics as education tool that is just boring talking heads.
Super boring.
Will Eisner was not doing boring talking heads.
And very strategically, like, the format is such that the infantryman could, like, slip that in his back pocket.
Yes. Yeah, exactly right. And you can see, like, there would be, I don't want to say mandates, but kind of like mission statements. In this case, it's an idea of, hey, check out your supplies. If it's stuff you're not using, here's the way to get those to people that will use them. You know, so it's very much like this is a military publication designed to make things work better. And why not? You know, like, it's such a testament to comics. In the intro, Eddie Campbell talks about how you have the great Eisner comics. I mean, the great Spirit comics. And then Eisner disappears for a while. And then you have Contract with God and a whole bunch of great graphic novels by Will Eisner. This is the missing piece.
Right.
You know, this is 20 years in between those two. And you really kind of get to see him, you know, we talk about woodshedding, you know, go out, maybe learn a new hold, as JR might say. This is a great cartoonist that kind of goes out and tests it out, because this is an audience that's not a bunch of psychophants. This is an audience that is like, hey, does this idea really communicate what I want it to? So a remarkable volume. And because it was Abrams, I think they printed a lot of these for a while, at least. I got this one at some kind of discount, I remember, because it wasn't something I thought, oh, I need that, until I got it and spent some time with it. And then I was like, you know what? This is a great comics document. And it's kind of cool. The end pages, I was a big fan of. These are Will Eisner's shelves. He had the issues bound.
That's so sick.
Pretty cool. Alex Toth. Once again, man, how much All-Stars can we do here, Ed? This is the best of the best we're drawing comics for Army publications. And in this case, this is John Fury. 1954, Alex Toth gets drafted at age 26. 1954, you guys that are Alex Toth historians, you know that he's been drawing comics for a while at that point. So ends up in Japan, and the base has its own newspaper, as all of these army bases seem to do. Pretty soon he's being the art director on that newspaper, and pretty soon he's doing a weekly strip that he has created, written, and drawn, which, again, very rare. Alex Toth didn't do a lot of that kind of thing. So you're getting everything here, but some of it is like, this is very low production, and you can kind of see that sketchiness in these, in some of these pages. This is another one where hard to find stuff to reproduce, because it's a base newspaper. You know, how many copies of this thing could have been printed? Not very many. I believe most of this is from Alex Toth's collection.
It must be.
But you get a chance to see him having fun. And he said that one of the great thrills of this is the paper would be printed and distributed on Fridays on the base. And by the time he would get to the cafeteria dinner, he kind of knew if that strip landed or not that week. Pretty amazing. And he does this, I believe, for one full year. So you're going to get about 50 of these spread across that year on a weekly basis. And what a record for Alex Toth. And also just the idea of, like, these guys have to create.
Right.
You know, he's in the army, and yet he's finding time to make comics. And yeah, to make some of the most interesting comics of his life, because, again, this is him working by himself on these comics.
Yeah, it's extremely inspiring, man. It makes me think of the great, Neil Gaiman commencement speech, you know.
Yes.
Make great art. You know, in times of war, make great art. Get it? You get divorced, make great art.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was going to show this off, but what the heck. We're here, so I pulled it out. This is the colored version of John Fury, and I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, we don't have to say anything.
It does contain the last interview with Alex Toth, is back matter. It's a two-parter in here.
Who do we blame for this?
This coloring. I don't know, Ed.
Is it a J.D. Spurlock book?
Nah, this was done. I don't know if Paul Power is the guy who actually colored this or not, but he's the guy colored Matt Webb. Matt Webb, I think, is an Image colorist at this point.
Well, it looks like Image coloring.
Yeah, 2010. So the coloring's disappointing, but fortunately, there are alternatives to it where you can just kind of see the.
Frankly, the most egregious thing is that Toth is a very thoughtful artist, and this is drawn for black and white, so it ain't even supposed to have color.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, a remarkable document. It's one of these that it's amazing that we have access to this.
And show the cover to this book so that the people know exactly which one it is. Genius Isolated. So this is like the third book, right? The last book?
I don't know. I don't remember the order that they were published in, but they have been reissuing these, I believe, in paperback,
mm-hmm.
I believe. So if you missed the hardcover of these, you should have another crack at it. Highly recommend it. I mean, this is to me, the Alex Toth documents, or these three.
Yeah.
I guess there's four of them, actually. But really great job there in terms of Alex Toth and work that I've never seen a John Fury otherwise, you know, and those color versions, not the one to do.
So now we're going, like, all that stuff, instructive, heartfelt, Ernest. Now we're going into Rambo mode.
This was published in Overseas Weekly, which was not an army publication, but was distributed exclusively on military bases. So what you had was an advertised driven publication to enlisted men. And that meant you want them to read this. So let's put the Rambos and the pulp kind of tradition in here if you want to really have those results. And there have been a couple of versions and collections of canon done over the years, but what you see is, like, this history in the beginning points out what these are, and they're the paperback books.
Yeah.
You know, they're the destroyers and, you know, those kinds of books that were so popular for so long. By the time this comes up, 1970 to 73 is whenever it ran, those books were basically, you know, on their way out at that point. So this is one of those last, like, super square-jawed hero kind of character, tough guys. And part of that intro is saying it's a different time period because, boy, is this a sexist strip. But that's kind of what you get at that time, you know, late 60s. This is very much in a different time frame.
Yeah, he's an old-ass dude.
First appearance, Heroes, Inc. This is a book we should cover at some point.
Sure.
This was self-published by Wally Wood. I think it was self-published. It's all Wally Wood characters, and this is the first appearance of Cannon. So Cannon shows up here, and then he gets this offer to do work for Overseas Weekly. This was a weekly, kind of like a Sunday strip. and ran until 73, at which time Sally Forth becomes his overseas weekly contribution, which I don't know if we'll ever be able to show any of that. But I love this one. We talked about where I found this. We think it was from a used bookstore here in Pittsburgh that maybe we were shopping together and I grabbed this one ahead of you.
Right, yeah.
But I really loved it. It's that it's very much, you think of those action movies that you see at the video store in the early days in the 80s of like, just get it out on video, and it's kind of a cheap budget action movie with, you know, tropes and kind of that hero that's two-dimensional. But as a kid, that's what I liked. It's pulp heroes.
That's all.
That's what this is.
He knows what it is.
I think he was getting paid well. You know, like, you can see a lot of effort on these pages. So his art is fantastic at this time. Still some shortcuts. You know, I hope we get a couple of pages that we can see that have some cars and stuff on him. But he's amazing. You know, like, he's really bringing it. And right in the beginning, they show this. This is what his layouts are like. It says the sketches below inked swiftly over very loose blue pencil roughs. So this is an example of kind of those very, very rough sketches, and then you get to see, I think, of Wally Wood is almost that precursor to the Neil Adams continuity studio ink guys, in that if Wood touched it last, it looked like Wood.
Sure. Yeah, go look at those Stalker comics that Steve Ditko penciled and Wally Wood inks.
Great use of like blacks and also of the gray scaling, you know, probably screen tone, I'm guessing.
This looks like that's duotone.
You think?
This piece, definitely. The unevenness of it.
And he would do that, like, you know,
double lighting, like, that's such a classic.
He would, you know, cut out a sheet and paste it down.
Just amazing. Like, man, I look at the screen and you think of, like, the 22 panels that always work.
Right.
And stuff like that. Comics just really aren't made this way anymore in terms of your light and dark and values and stuff. And it's just a chance for Wood to really shine. And some of the action stuff, you know, having these, like, World War II fighter planes coming in, Jeeps, tanks, like, in a lot of ways, this is that little kid Jim Rugg, you know, dream comic. Like, this was the kind of movies I was looking for, and just really exciting stuff. You see, like, the men fighting, you know, he's tied to the chair, but he's still fighting back, flipping around. So it's an action comic, you know, it's an action comic in the vein of these action movies that we spent so much time watching.
And the fun thing about a strip like this that's coming out on a, like, weekly basis and these short snippets is he doesn't want any one of those to be boring. So there's cool shit happening constantly. It's kind of like when you read a Tintin album. He's constantly in peril every 2 seconds.
You got to do it, man. If you're getting one page a week, you got to do it. Got to have everything on there. And love seeing a picture of smiling Wally Wood.
Yeah, but not with a gun.
Yeah, that's
true. Because it makes you wonder, is that the gun?
Yeah. Not with the gun is right. And Fantagraphics has done, like I said, a couple of different versions of this.
It might be out of print.
Currently,
the latest round you know, came out in issues,
mm-hmm.
came out in this version, which is much bigger, and then, like, you cut the pages, like, in half,
right?
And then so there's a version that's more like landscape format.
Yeah, and I'm betting pretty good reproduction is my guess.
Yeah, beautifully designed.
But it's some great Wally Wood. This is, you know, how I don't know if you have this, Ed, but I'll have artists that you know are good.
Yeah,
they have their reputation. But it doesn't necessarily, like, I don't connect, you know, the heart doesn't connect. This was the thing that I read, and then I went out and bought Sally Forth and, you know, just really kind of fell in love with Wally Wood as a storyteller with this story.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Good to go?
I am.
Okay, Fabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell so that we can notify you when new vids are available. We are a daily YouTube channel, and we've got more than 1,000 videos in our archives at this moment. So chances are we might have covered your favorite comics. Hit the little magnifying glass on the front page of the Cartoonist Kayfabe YouTube channel. Give your favorite comics a search and take a look and see if we covered, if we did episodes on that comic. If not, put something in the comments immediately so that we can bump that up to our to-read pile. The videos are brought to you by the Patreon. The King Kayfabers on our Patreon get all the videos before anybody else. Mitigates the kayfabe effect. When we show off a book like this canon book, the King Kayfabers are going out and buying those last hardcovers off of Amazon, eBay, and their comic shops. So it behooves you to get in early. Check out these videos. The subscription on Patreon pays for itself. Videos are brought to you by the books that we make. So, Jimmy, tell the people what you have coming out.
My next release is Street Angel, Princess of Poverty. This will be out in November from Image Comics. You can start to pre-order that one now. And it goes with Street Angel, Deadliest Girl Alive. These two books do not reprint the same material, but together they do collect all of my Street Angel comics to date. So check that one out. True Crime Funnies, my latest self-published comic book. I ran out of the print copies. Thank you all very much. But I am reprinting that, hopefully in time for Baltimore, and they'll be available on my website after that. You can also read it on patreon.com/jimrug, where I post all of my new comics and work. Other books that are available right now, The Plain Janes, the first young adult graphic novel. I know our demographics, so I say this is the one to buy for gifts for the nieces and daughters in your life. And Hulk Grand Design, my contribution to the Grand Design series. I could not be happier with how this book turned out. But it looks like this thing is out of print now. It's not available at the distribution level. There still should be copies sitting on your good comic shop shelves. So pick this one up now if you haven't already, because once it's out of stock, it may be gone. So grab that one before it's too late and follow me on Patreon.
Hip Hop Family Tree Omnibus coming to you in time for the holiday season. It is the 10-year anniversary of the Hip Hop Family Tree comic in print. It is the 50th anniversary of hip hop culture in general, so we had to do it up fly. It's collecting all 4 volumes of Hip Hop Family Tree's comics material and 150 pages of additionals. So this is a big phone book that I'm extremely excited about. It's the ultimate statement on Hip Hop Family Tree, and I hope you support the book when it comes out in October. Not the only holiday piece that I have coming out this year. In November comes the X-Men Grand Design trade paperback that collects all 3 volumes of X-Men Grand Design. I do have a volume or two of that out of print as we speak, so this is your way to get your hands on all of it. Like I said, it's going to be coming out in November. Both of these guys are ready to go in time for the holidays. Red Room is the comic that I'm working on these days. There are 2 trade paperbacks of Red Room out there currently. Crypto Killers represents the 3rd season of Red Room comics. In this 3rd issue, there is a backup story called Latchkey Kids here, but I changed the title to Switchblade Shorties. And it is a daily strip that I'm working on. I've yet to serialize it to the wider world, but exclusively on my Patreon, you can get access to it. $3 is the cost, man. And, you know, there's a complete episode up there probably by the time you see this video. Not the only ways to support the Cartoonist Kayfabe channel, however, Jimmy. Let the people know.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video. You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts, merchandise, mugs, hats, fanny packs, stickers, and more at our spread shop. That link is also under this video.
All good ways to support the Cartoonist Kayfabe channel. Give them those marching orders and we'll be on our way.
Read more comics.